I am Lemuel Gulliver, and I'm going to tell you the story of A Voyage to Lilliput. I, Lemuel Gulliver, was born in Nottinghamshire, England. I attended Emmanuel College in Cambridge when I was 14 years old. 3 years later, finding the cost of college too great, I was apprenticed to a doctor and studied to become a surgeon. Since I always longed to travel, I also studied navigation, for I hoped to use my skill as a surgeon on board some ship. Well, when my studies were finished, I got a post aboard the good ship Antelope, and on May 4th, 1699, set sail for the East Indies. Everything went well until we encountered a violent storm, and our ship was driven far to the south. Storm lasted so long that 12 of our crew died, and the rest was soon in a very weak condition. On the 5th of November, the wind blew us directly upon a rock, and the ship split in two. 6 of the crew and I managed to get into a boat. We rowed until we were able to row no longer. Then we allowed the waves to carry us where they would, and in half an hour, the boat was upset. My companions disappeared, while I swam as fortune directed me. When I could struggle no longer, I found myself in a shallow place where I could touch bottom. Ahead of me was land, and I began walking toward it. Though I came nearer, I could see neither houses nor people. This didn't disturb me, for I was so weak and tired, I simply lay down to sleep. At daylight, I awakened. I tried to rise, but could not stir. I found my arms and legs were firmly fastened to the ground, while my hair was tied down in the same manner. As I lay there, I heard a peculiar noise, but tied down as I was, I couldn't move my head to see where it came from. Shortly after, I felt something alive moving on my left leg and advancing toward my chin. At last, I discovered what it was. It was a human creature, not more than 6 inches tall. He had a bow and arrow in his hands and a quiver on his back. Then I felt at least 40 more of the same kind following the first. I was so surprised and roared so loudly that they all ran back in fright. However, they soon returned, and one of them cried out in a shrill voice, "Hickamy de goo!" About this time, I was able to break the strings that fastened my left arm to the ground. But before I could seize them, the creatures ran off a second time, and with the shrill cry of, "Togo, Fornic!" I felt over 100 arrows sink into my left hand. These arrows stung and burned like needles. Then they shot another flight, and these fell on my face. I began to groan in pain, and they let loose another volley of arrows. By this time, I realized it was wisest to lie still into night, when I hoped under cover of darkness to loosen the bonds which held me. But when the people saw I was quiet, they stopped shooting their arrows. However, I could tell by the sound that their numbers had increased. Then, for about an hour, I heard a curious hammering on my right. When it ceased, about 50 of the little people cut the strings that fastened my head, and I could see they had built a stage upon which 4 of the little people were standing. One of them, who looked more important than the others, began to make a long speech of which I understood not a single word. As well as I could, I made signs to them that I would do them no harm, and then, feeling faint with hunger, I pointed to my mouth many times to show them I wanted something to eat. Well, they must have understood me, because several ladders were placed against my sides, and about 100 little people climbed up and carried to my mouth all kinds of food and drink. Food was delicious, but the portions were very small. A leg of mutton was no bigger than a lark's wing, while the loaves of bread were the size of bullets. The people were amazed at the huge amount I could eat. As the small people walked back and forth over my body, I was sorely tempted to seize 40 or 50 of them and throw them to the ground, and then to make a dash for liberty. But the pain I had already suffered from their arrows and the promise I had made not to harm them made me think better of it, and so I lay there quietly. Soon another small man, who appeared to be an officer of very high rank, marched on to my chin and held a paper before my eyes. The officer then made a long speech, often pointing towards something a long way off, and, as I afterwards learned, told me that the emperor had decreed that I was to be taken as a prisoner to a city which is the capital of their country. After this, the little people drew out the arrows that still stuck in my hands and face, rubbed the wounds with a pleasant-smelling ointment, which, in a few moments, so soothed my pain that I fell fast asleep. I awakened with a fit of sneezing and with the impression of small feet running off my chest. Where was I? Bound still, but no longer lying on the ground, it puzzled me that I now lay on sort of a platform. How had I gotten there? Soon I figured out what had happened. Before I fell asleep, I'd heard a rumbling as of wheels and the shouts of many people. This, it seemed, was caused by the arrival of a huge flat wagon, only a few inches high, but nearly 7 feet long, drawn by 1,500 of the emperor's strongest horses. I slept very deeply, because a sleeping potion had been placed in the wine they gave me to drink. Therefore, they could easily lift me onto the wagon, tie me fast, and pull me to the city. I was well on my way to the city when I awakened. They had halted for a moment to rest their horses, and one of the officers of the emperor's guard climbed up onto my body, and while looking at my face, could not resist the temptation of putting the point of his sword up my nose. Well, this tickled me, and I awakened with a violent sneeze. We reached the city the following day, and I had to spend the night lying on this curious wagon while 500 guards stood on each side of me, ready to shoot if I dared to move. When we arrived at the city, the emperor and all his court came out to meet us. The wagon stopped at an ancient deserted temple, thought to be the largest in the whole kingdom. It was here they decided to keep me. The temple gate was about 4 feet high and almost 2 feet wide. I easily crept through it. Once inside the building, the emperor's blacksmiths fastened many chains about my left ankle. These chains were nearly 6 feet long, so I could get a little exercise by walking back and forth outside. Whenever I became tired, I could easily crawl through the door and lie down. Whenever I walked outside, thousands of people thronged around to look at me. And if His Imperial Majesty had not issued a proclamation against this, the country would have been in a terrible state, for no one was doing any work. For about 2 weeks, I slept on the ground in my house. Meantime, the emperor gave orders that a bed should be made for me. So 600 of their small beds were brought in there in carriages and put together in my house. In the same manner, they provided me with sheets and blankets. 600 of each were sewn together to make a single blanket or sheet for me. At this time, the emperor held frequent councils where there was much discussion of what should be done with me. I was afterward told by a particular friend that the court was very concerned about me. They were afraid I might break loose and do them harm, or that I would eat so much it might cause a famine. From time to time, they decided they ought to starve me or kill me with poisoned arrows. This idea, however, was given up because they thought it would be very difficult to get rid of so large a body. So I was allowed to remain alive. 6 professors were assigned to teach me the language. When I could speak it, I learned a great deal about the land in which I now found myself. It was called Lilliput, and the people Lilliputians. These Lilliputians believed their kingdom and the neighboring country of Blefuscu were the whole world. Blefuscu lay across a channel, and to these little people seemed an enormous distance away. But to me, it seemed no farther than a mile. The Lilliputians knew of no land beyond Blefuscu, so they believed I had fallen from the moon or from one of the stars. For it was impossible, they said, that so big a race of men could live on Earth. On learning their language, my first request of the emperor was for my freedom. This I begged of him each day while on my knees. His answer was that I should be patient. I could not be given liberty without consent of the council. First, I must swear to live at peace with him and his kingdom. He assured me, however, that they would treat me kindly. As the emperor and his followers gained more faith in me and became less afraid of my breaking loose and doing some mischief, they began to treat me in a more friendly way, and showed me some of the manners and customs of the country. Some of these were very curious. Since the size of the natives is less than 6 inches, their plants, trees, and animals are very small, too. The tallest horses are no more than 5 inches high. The sheep are 1.5 inches high, while the geese are about the size of a bumblebee. Some of their laws and customs are very peculiar, too. For example, one of their favorite sports is rope dancing. And I was told that one of the most certain means of being promoted to high office was to possess unusual ability in this art of rope dancing. Indeed, it was said that the Lord High Treasurer himself had gained and kept his position chiefly because of his great skill in turning somersaults on the tightrope. There was hardly a minister of state who did not owe his position to success in this field. Few of them had escaped without severe accidents at one time or another. But no matter how many or bad the falls, there were always plenty of other persons to attempt the same or some more difficult jump. It may interest you to know how I lived in this country during the 9 months and 13 days I spent there. First of all, I made for myself a table and a chair out of the largest trees in the royal park. When my clothes were in rags, 200 seamstresses were employed to make me a shirt, while 300 tailors were employed to make the rest of my garments. Now, since each tailor could handle only a small part of my coat or breeches at a time, when they were finished, they looked like a patchwork quilt, though all of one color. I had 300 cooks to prepare my meals. Each prepared me 2 dishes apiece. Each dish was about 1 mouthful, but of pleasant flavor. It took 20 servants to serve me each meal. Now, one day, the emperor decided that he and his family would like to watch me while I ate. And when they came, I placed them on chairs of state at my table. Now, Flimnap, the Lord High Treasurer, who was my enemy, came with them and watched me sourly. However, I didn't let his presence disturb me, for I ate more than usual to honor them and my own dear country. I have good reason to believe this incident was the cause of my eventual downfall in that country, for I later learned that Flimnap, always my secret enemy, used it as an excuse to take His Majesty a report from the Treasury to show that I cost them over 1.5 million sprugs and urged him to get rid of me as soon as possible. A sprug is their largest gold coin, about the size of a spangle. Well, at that time, the emperor paid little attention to the report, for he was my friend. I hoped that the more His Majesty was pleased with me, the sooner he would grant me my liberty. So, to entertain him, I would frequently permit 5 or 6 of the natives to dance upon my hand, or let the boys and girls play hide-and-seek in my hair. About this time, the emperor put me to a curious test. I was directed to stand with my feet wide apart, while 3,000 of his troops, with colors flying, marched through the great arch made of my legs. The emperor and his queen sat in the coach near my left leg, watching closely to see whether I would move and injure any of the soldiers. Fortunately, everything came off perfectly. No one was hurt, and shortly after, I was set free. This is how it came about. The emperor's council met and drew up a contract, which I was to sign so my chains could be taken off. Among other things, I had to agree to be their ally against the island of Blefuscu. Though I did not like all of the conditions of the contract, I signed it, and so gained my long-sought freedom. About 2 weeks later, Reldresal, the emperor's chief secretary and my very good friend, came to have a long and serious talk with me about the national emergency. He said there were severe troubles which threatened the liberty of the country. For some years, a war had been raging with the Blefuscans, and now Lilliput was in danger of invasion from them. The war began in this way. It had always been the custom in Lilliput, as far back as history went, for people to break their breakfast eggs at the big end of the egg. But it had happened that when the present emperor's grandfather was a boy, he had severely cut his finger by breaking the egg in the usual way. Therefore, his father gave strict commands that in the future, all Lilliputians must break their eggs at the small end. Now, the people were so angered by this order that they refused to obey. As a result, not less than 6 rebellions had taken place. Thousands of Lilliputians had their heads cut off or had been thrown into prison, while thousands of others fled to Blefuscu rather than obey the hated order. The Blefuscans welcomed them warmly and finally took up their cause by waging a war against Lilliput. The chief secretary ended his talk by saying that the emperor of Lilliput expected me to help in defeating the Blefuscan fleet. I replied that I was ready to do all I could to aid him in this desperate time, and I at once thought of a plan whereby I might destroy the whole Blefuscan fleet at one blow. Now, I had learned that the water between Lilliput and Blefuscu was no deeper than 6 feet. I had also learned that 50 warships of the Blefuscan Navy lay in their harbor. So I requested a great length of the strongest cable and a quantity of iron bars. I made 50 hooks out of the iron bars, which were no bigger than knitting needles, and attached them to 50 lengths of cable. Then, carrying these, I walked to the coast and waded out into the sea. Soon I was in the Blefuscan harbor. When the Blefuscans saw me, the sailors jumped off the ships and swam ashore in a terrible fright. Then I quietly took my hooks and cables, attached one to each of the ships, and pulled them all across the channel back to Lilliput. Well, the emperor and his followers stood waiting for me on the shore. Everyone was delighted, and the emperor was so pleased that he immediately created me a Nardac, the highest honor it was in his power to bestow. My great success over the Blefuscans, however, brought me only trouble, for now the emperor became wickedly ambitious and can think of nothing but conquering the entire empire of Blefuscu and becoming the sole monarch of the whole world. But to do this, he needed my assistance and asked it of me. I replied that I would never aid in bringing a free and brave people into slavery, upon which he became so angry that he began to believe I was a traitor to Lilliput. Well, about this time, ambassadors from Blefuscu came to Lilliput to seek a treaty of peace. After the treaty was made, they paid me a formal call. No doubt they had heard I refused to cooperate in their destruction. Then they invited me to visit their country, which I promised to do. When I asked the Lilliputian emperor if I could make this visit, he agreed, but in a manner so cold and so distant, I couldn't help noticing it. Things went from bad to worse. My enemies kept insisting I cost the treasury too much and that I was a traitor. Well, one night, one of the emperor's followers, for whom I had done some small services, came to tell me that it had been decided that I should be put to death by secret and painful means. Naturally, when I learned of this, I had to do something and do it quickly. So I immediately wrote a letter to the emperor, telling him I had decided to visit Blefuscu that very day. Without waiting for an answer, I set out for the coast. I was warmly welcomed by the Blefuscans, and they gave me a place in an open field where I might sleep. However, I knew I couldn't stay in this country long, for the Lilliputians were still determined to do away with me. By a stroke of good fortune, 3 days after my arrival, I noticed something in the channel which looked like a boat floating bottom side up. I waded out and found I was right. It was a boat. Well, I pulled ashore, and for the next several weeks, I worked to make oars, a mast, and a sail for it. Then, with the help of the Blefuscans, I fitted it out with food and provisions for a voyage. In less than a month, I was ready to sail. I took with me hundreds of oxen and sheep, a quantity of bread and wine, and as much cooked meat as 400 cooks could prepare, and left the island of Blefuscu. Well, I sailed eastward for 2 days. And on the evening of the second day, to my great joy, I sighted a ship. When I reached it, I discovered it was an English vessel on her way home from Japan. I put the tiny cattle in my pockets and went aboard. When I told my tale to the captain, he stared with wonder and thought I was raving. But when I showed him the tiny cattle and the tiny sheep, he began to believe I was telling the truth. On the 13th of April, 1702, we arrived in England. There I joyously rejoined my family and made a great deal of money showing my tiny cattle around the country. I stayed home for 2 months before the desire to travel again overcame me, and I set sail on board a merchant ship called the Adventure. Though we were bound for Surratt, we never reached that destination. Instead, I arrived at one of the most fantastic lands on the face of the earth. But the account of this voyage must be learned in the next part of my travels.